Hey, we're going to take a little break here and talk about Interstate batteries. Now, if you're like me, enjoying the great outdoors, you need gear that is as reliable as it gets. That's why I power my adventures with Interstate batteries. I use Interstate batteries in my boats. I use Interstate batteries in my camper. Great for your truck, too. From Alaska to Montana, they're outrageously dependable. Battery is essential. With over 150,000 dealer locations, finding one is easy. For all your vehicles, land or sea, choose Interstate. Head to interstatebatteries.com and find your power today. Hey, everybody, listen up. I got mega huge news. Meat Eater Live is heading back out on the road. That's right. Join me and the crew. Clay Newcomb, Cal, Yanni, Spencer's going to be there. Phil the Engineer is going to be there. Meat Eater Live, headed back out. Now, when you get every ticket, okay, every ticket you buy, you get a signed copy of our new Meat Eater Outdoor Cookbook. This tour is celebrating the release of the book. Buy a ticket, get a signed copy, Meat Eater Outdoor Cookbook, wild game recipes for the grill, smoker, camp stove, and campfire, which I'll point out is a $38 value. Here's where we're going to go. April 23rd, the Mesa Arts Center in Mesa, Arizona. April 24th, the Balboa Theater in San Diego. April 25th, the Grove in Anaheim, California. April 27th, the Crest Theater in Sacramento. April 29, the Union in Salt Lake City. April 30, the Egyptian in Boise. May 1, the Wilma Theater in Missoula. May 2, the Bing Crosby Theater in Spokane, Washington. May 4, Revolution Hall in Portland, Oregon. And May 5, the last day of the tour, Pantages Theater in Tacoma, Washington. For tickets and more information, visit the events page at TheMeatEater.com. Hope to see you at the show.
I guess I grew up on an older road.
Hey, everybody! Welcome to another episode of Hunting Collective. I am Benjamin Patrick O'Brien, the first. I'm joined by Philip T. Engineer. Say hello, Philip.
That was inappropriate and uncalled for.
What was?
That horrifying yelp at the beginning of the episode.
That was a barbaric yelp. Yeah. I'll have you know.
Okay.
I'll have you know. I'm excited for episode 163. We have spent the last couple of weeks, I would say, getting into some heavy topics, Phil. Gun rights, gun ownership. Cultural division, all types of things that has informed and entertained some folks and other folks not so much, but we trudge forward. Now, this week, I think we are bringing a lot of that to a head. I just got finished talking with Clay Newcomb on our very first official Guard the Gate segment of this show. We talked for over an hour about Senate Bill 252, in the California legislature to ban black bear hunting forever, I guess. We'll just call it forever. I think this is really kind of the culmination of a lot of things we've been talking about over the last couple of weeks and over really the last couple of years on this show. So I'm excited for you to hear what we uncovered and talk through with Clay. But we got a lot of other things happening in the THC cult, universe, whatever, world, however we want to talk about it. So let's just get rolling, Phil. We have we've helped rebuild a marriage. So do you want to hear about the story about how THC helped rebuild a marriage?
I mean, I can't say no to that.
Nobody can. This was Jesse G wrote in, and that was her subject line: THC helping rebuild marriages.
Wow, this is let's see how this competes with the dumper story about how THC is changing lives.
Right, and you know me, this is just a little, you know, it's like a little shine on my ego. I feel like I'm changing the world, and then I'll read your email in the air. That's how it works. She says, thanks for putting out the show that we do. She's a mother of a three-year-old twin daughters. And so she says, so any alone time is hugely valuable, and she listens to THC. So thanks for doing that, Jesse, and twin three-year-olds. Phil, How do you feel about twin 3-year olds?
Oh my gosh. Woo! I mean, yeah, that's a load. That is a workload. That's like one of the things that always horrified me when between our first and second kid, having another kid, the thought of it being twins or triplets, something completely unexpected that rocks your world for years. So my thoughts are with you, and you're a hero.
Jesse G. Thank you. I really feel like I'm going to stop saying people's last names because we read so many emails that have personal implications. I just want to put that out there into the universe that I understand that now, and I am going to just give you the last initial of people's names, protect the innocent. All right. She said, this is all good, though. She said she has a thank you for providing such a wonderful jumping off point for my husband and I to listen together to the THC and for essentially giving us something to find to do together. Start going hunting and lessening our distance from where our food comes from. Now, on to the indirect marriage counseling that you've offered. My husband is a special forces medic, and due to the nature of his job, his personality is not exactly the most comforting and emotionally warm and fuzzy. That's just like Phil. The nature of his job makes him just an emotionally void son of a bee. It keeps him safe in the times he's overseas, but it makes him very challenging to try to find common ground in a marriage, as well as just find something to do as a couple and as a family. His family never hunted, but they often hiked and camped, and he continues to love things like that to this day. In contrast, my dad is military, and he hunted to get alone time for the demands of job and family. As it was his thing, and I was the typical teenage girl, I never got involved in the hunting adventures, but he brought my husband and I each a bow for a wedding gift. That's a badass wedding gift. Okay.
Yeah, wow.
Jesse, your dad is a badass. A couple of bows for your wedding gifts. We should do more of that in this culture. Anyway, he bought those wedding gifts with hopes that we would just use them together, meaning as husband and wife. I ended up being fairly good with it, and my husband is never one to let someone be better than him, so it encouraged us to practice. All right, we're delving deep into this marriage, Phil. Deep into this marriage.
Yeah, it's very we've hit some revealing blocks. So yeah, let's keep going.
Then we got pregnant with twins right before deployment after years of trying and the trials of infertility. Then moved twice, and I hadn't picked up a bow in years until I started listening to your podcast. The Special Forces divorce rate is somewhere between 75% to 90%. That's worth repeating. The Special Forces divorce rate is somewhere around 75% to 90%, depending on who you ask. With a very high deployment tempo and skyrocketing TBI, PTSD, and substance abuse rates, it's not very hard to see why. But the solutions are harder to figure out. Special Forces couples need time together, but finding something that both parts of the marriage enjoy is a real challenge. I once asked my husband to attend a cooking class, and while he did great, it was definitely not something that we repeated. Hunting, learning about hunting, and just the acts of target practice have been the perfect antidote to these challenges. As can be expected, he's much better with firearms than I am, and so we get the chance to teach each other and learn from each other. Through listening to your podcast and a lot of backyard archery practice during nap time, this is the most relatable story. A lot of it, not all of it, but the kid part is most relatable. Listening to a lot of backyard archery practice during nap time after the twins go to sleep. I do that all the time. We've been able to find some common ground and an activity that we both enjoy doing together while challenging one another to get better and better. We've even started getting our hunting licenses with the hope that we can eventually lessen our dependence on the grocery store and shorten the path from our food to our dining room table. It's almost a race to see who can do it first. But this is a competitive couple, Phil. And I dig it. I dig that it's healthy for them. it's almost a race to see who can do it first, with the understanding that the time spent together and learning something new is what is at the foundation. We now also have something to keep us connected during these frequent trips, listening to the Meteor podcast and learning more and more about how to become ethical hunters and passionate conservationists and hopefully top chefs of wild game. We even have plans to renew our vows this year just to signify how much of a turning point this has been for our marriage and the new direction and more solid foundation this has created for our family. I'll wrap it up so that this doesn't just ramble on and on, but I just want to say thank you for providing such a meaningful content that can span all ideologies and for putting in the work that you do. She said, I'm sure that as of the last two episodes, you're dealing with a quagmire of stupidity, so I hope that this serves as some encouragement. Jesse G, Phil the engineer, take first crack at a reaction.
I mean, that's great. That's fantastic. You know, that's... It's funny because like the last few months I've been trying, like especially with COVID and spending more time in the house and everything, like my wife and I have been trying to find like things we can do together. and it's like always kind of just like, oh, let's try this board game, let's try to like, because I mean we both already do a lot of cooking, so but like just something like an activity we can do together just to like that we're both enjoying equally.
Yeah.
Sometimes that can be tough to find, with especially with two kids running around and finding the time for it, the patience for it. So I mean, hey, more power to you.
Yeah. I mean, I'm assuming we're in the trust tree here. We're in the nest, since a lot of people hate me for being a dirty lib. But my wife and I go to marriage counseling. Do you guys go to marriage counseling, Phil?
No, we have not yet. Not yet.
Okay. Well, if you ever need to, I got a good guy. His name's Doug. He's awesome. He wears the perfect type of sweaters. I don't know if he, I think he might be listening to the podcast at this point, so he might hear the shout out.
Hi, Doug.
Yeah, maybe Doug will sponsor. Maybe we'll start reading ads for Doug, marriage counselor. Okay. But like Doug and my wife and I were talking last Thursday about this exact thing, man. Like, you have kids, it's, you know, working from home, life is changing, it's unpredictable. What do you do together, man? It's game night. And now I read this email from Jesse G and it all comes together for me. So I'm very happy for this wonderful couple. Maybe Phil and I can be there virtually when you renew your vows. Will you commit to that, Phil?
For their sake, no, I will not commit to it.
I say, just a suggestion, Jesse, if you want to like rent a big TV and Phil and I can be there split screen, I'll even like become ordained if I need to. I don't know if there's any official thing that needs to happen with renewing of specific wedding vows. But Phil has even just volunteered just now to read some of your wedding vows for you.
I missed that part of the podcast.
Yeah, no, as his commitment to your relationship, because now we're also invested in your future together. So this makes me incredibly happy, and boy, it's really a personal touch there, Jesse. When I read that, I thought, oh, somebody's going through what I'm going through, trying to keep your marriage together in a time of crisis. So Phil, thanks for volunteering. I really appreciate you supporting the listeners like you always do.
Oh, you know me.
I got another email from Jonathan B. He said, the title of this thing was Find Hunting Fascinating, But Don't Want to Hunt. I don't know. This just interested me, so I'm going to read it to you. He said, love the podcast. I'm passionate about conservation, wildlife, and our relationship with nature. And this show fuels all those interests of mine. However, while I find hunting fascinating, I honestly have no desire to go out in the field for myself. I'm an active angler, and I keep some of my catch, but that's as far as I really care to go with personally harvesting wildlife for meat. I proudly donate and am a member of BHA. I eat venison and duck that my family harvests. I'm saving to purchase some land where I can allow hunters to visit and fish if I can find a property with a body of water. I respect the hell out of hunters and enjoy living vicariously through you all. I know this is the year of the new hunter. Best of luck to Phil, but I wanted to give a shout out to the other folks like myself. And he asked for permission. Phil, do you give Jonathan B. permission to join the cult if he's solely an angler?
Am I the person who has the power to do that?
Yeah, you're the membership coordinator.
Oh, great. Does that come with a raise?
No.
Okay. Then yes. Yes, you can join the cult.
Thank you.
As a person who doesn't hunt themselves, and I guess I'm a membership coordinator. I mean, anyone can join, I guess.
You're benevolent. You're benevolent in your powers. No, I mean, I was reading this and I was thinking, is this Phil's alter ego? Is this Phil's way of telling me?
This is very relatable. Yeah.
So let's break this down, Phil. Is this where you're at? You're like, hey, listen, Ben, am I forcing you to hunt? Before we get into this turkey hunting planning in earnest, because we got to get some dates. I think early May is where we're looking at right now. But this isn't you, is it? Like, you don't want to just like hang out with us and not take part, right?
No, I'm going to take part. I've told you I'm willing to try anything.
Okay,
Ben.
Okay.
But like it's relatable because like I've been upfront. I've been upfront with Eric Hall. My number is not high. maybe it will be after I try it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'm not like especially after being here for a while now, like I see the positive impacts that hunting, you know, has in multitudes, whether it's the environment or otherwise. I just like I'm not compelled to go out there and do it myself yet.
Okay. Well, listen, just like last week, we welcome hate listeners. We welcome, not that this is directly comparable, we welcome non-hunters as well to listen and enjoy whatever it is you take from this little program.
Please do.
Please do. You all are welcome here. So it's good to know that guys like Jonathan B are out there and really Jesse G as well. So, but we got a lot of stuff going on in our world. So Phil, I've talked to Kayla Ray. If you don't remember Kayla, she is, I would say, like relatively unknown or little known singer of great talent. She sang, what was poetry to my ears, White Claw Wasted. Or you can't judge a White Claw man by the size of his can, and really took a space in my heart with that song. And so I was inspired to have her do a song for this show. Now, how long has it been, Phil? Have you been here the entire time you've been here? We've had the same theme song, same introductory song since you've been here, right?
Yep, that's true.
So everybody's heard that enough. It's time to change. And I know when we switched to the current song, we got a lot of feedback from people who were both very upset and very happy. So this song means something to all you out there. And we also heard that our current song, Old Number 7, went up in the charts a little bit after we first launched it. And also its sales went up. We heard from some folks in the know on that. Its sales on iTunes went up. So hopefully we can help Kayla Ray get what she deserves, because she's talented as possibly could be. So Phil, we're going to do it, man. We're going to do what you suggested last week. And so here's what I need everybody to do. THC@themedia.com is the email. And we're not going to give you any tangible prizes here. Okay. We were handing out all kinds of things all the time in terms of prizes. We're not going to give you any tangible prizes, but here's what you're going to get. You're going to get, on every episode, we're going to shout out Kayla, and we're going to shout out whoever turns in the best written version of the lyrics of this song. Don't send us audio. For God's sakes, do not send us audio of you singing it. That is banned right away.
No, that's for Kayla only.
Yeah, Kayla sings, you do not. Don't you dare. I'm thinking about a few of you. Don't you dare send me some audio of you trying to sing this. Just write it out. Okay? THC@themedia.com. We're going to go a couple of weeks here, and you're going to be immortalized in the history of this podcast. At the end of every episode, we're going to thank you and thank Kayla for giving us the theme song. So that's your prize. Really great standing within the cult. This person will be forever immortalized on the Mount Rushmore of THC. So, I want you to write, this is going to be a 30 to 45 second little song in the beginning, and then there's going to be a 30 to 45 second bit at the end. So you just write whatever comes to your heart. It's got to be poetic. It's got to be meaningful. It's got to define this show. Every new listener that listens for the first time is going to hear this song, and they're going to have to understand what this show is all about via these words that you will write and email to me and Phil. So no pressure. Phil, do you want to encourage everyone? Warn everyone. Is there anything that you want to say to everyone in regards to writing a song about this podcast?
No, not at all. I've been witness to too much talent, just honestly wasted talent. Find something better to do with your with all this all these skills you have. But I have no doubt that we're going to get a lot of great entries, and it's going to be hard to choose.
It's true. I have no doubt. You know, feel free to suggest songs or melodies that go with your tune. But again, do not sing them. Don't send me voicemails of you singing, because I can't. There's no way I can listen to this. Many guys know will come in this way. So you feel free to suggest to Kayla Ray a musical accompaniment that might inspire her. But you don't need to do that. We just need your words. And again, We will immortalize you in THC history as the writer of the new theme song. And who knows? We might get this on iTunes. It might vault to number one in the charts. If you guys don't know, hunting celebrity, legend in the game, my friend Jim Shockey, he's a songwriter. He writes songs. His song was like number two or three on the iTunes charts at some point here recently. So this could be Kayla Ray and your chance out there to be actually have written a song that's on iTunes that people actually listen to. So I'm excited, Phil. Are you excited? Do you have any handicaps? You think Eric Hall might win this?
Well, all this talk about iTunes and charts and like writing credits, I feel like we need to talk to a lawyer. This sounds too official for me.
Quiet, Phil. Quiet.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
It's not official at all. Nothing we do here is official. And if you're out there and you're a lawyer listening in, maybe don't write the song. Maybe write us a legal document. We can have the person who writes the song sign.
Love it.
So crowdsource the whole damn thing. Yeah. Every part about it. So that's what we're doing over the next couple of weeks. I hope to have dozens or hundreds of submissions for this. This is incredibly important to this show and to me. And so I am counting on all of you to, so we say make it rain on the THC inbox with all your poetic and writing skills. Don't forget Barry Gilbert. Don't forget Phil the Engineer. Don't forget teaching Game of Thrones to Steven Ranella. Don't forget Yeti. Don't forget, don't forget anything. Make it detailed. Okay. Now, we got a big thing to do here. We got to get into Senate Bill 252, as you mentioned earlier, with our buddy Clay Newcomb. Clay Newcomb's going to help us guard the gate. We're going to learn all about this bill. And then when we're done, we're going to really get into what THC intends to do to help hunters of California continue to be able to hunt, eat, and enjoy the hides of black bears. Enjoy.
Hey, Steve here. I want to talk about something crucial for any outdoor enthusiast, which is battery reliability. I've got Interstate batteries powering my gear. I have Interstate batteries in my camper. I run an Interstate battery in my boats. I use Interstate batteries because the last thing I want is to be left powerless. Interstate batteries isn't just another battery company. They are outrageously dependable. In Alaska, the boat dealer that we use for getting stuff and repairs, he uses Interstate. Whether you're gearing up for hunting season, planning your next RV trip, or getting your boat ready, Interstate has the battery for all your needs. With over 150,000 dealer locations, the power you need is always nearby. Interstate batteries aren't just about power. It's about being prepared for any situation. Don't let a dead battery ruin your adventure. Head over to interstatebatteries.com, use their store locator, and equip yourself with a battery that won't let you down. When you're out in the wild or just on your daily commute, an Interstate battery is your key to a dependable journey. Hey everybody, listen up. I got mega huge news. Meat Eater Live is heading back out on the road. That's right. Join me and the crew. Clay Newcomb, Cal, Yanni, Spencer's going to be there. Phil the Engineer is going to be there. Meat Eater Live, headed back out. Now, when you get every ticket, okay, every ticket you buy, you get a signed copy of our new Meat Eater Outdoor Cookbook. This tour is celebrating the release of the book. Buy a ticket, get a signed copy, Meat Eater Outdoor Cookbook, wild game recipes for the grill, smoker, camp stove, and campfire, which I'll point out is a $38 value. Here's where we're going to go. April 23rd, the Mesa Arts Center in Mesa, Arizona. April 24th. The Balboa Theater in San Diego. April 25, The Grove in Anaheim, California. April 27, The Crest Theater in Sacramento. April 29, The Union in Salt Lake City. April 30, The Egyptian in Boise. May 1, The Wilma Theater in Missoula. May 2, The Bing Crosby Theater in Spokane, Washington. May 4, Revolution Hall in Portland, Oregon. And May 5, the last day of the tour, Pantages Theater in Tacoma, Washington. For tickets and more information, visit the events page at themeateater.com. Hope to see you at the show.
Clay Newcomb. Hello, sir.
Hello, Ben O'Brien.
How goes it today in Arkansas?
It's a beautiful day here in Arkansas. Sun's shining. Everything's going pretty good.
Well, last time we talked about having a segment and called Guard the Gate, and I was waiting to have something to, you know, really with some teeth to talk about in terms of guarding the gate, and boy, did we get it, man. I mean, this is what we're about to talk about is probably the best example of what you've come on in this show particularly and talked about over the last year or two at least. California wants to ban bear hunting.
Yeah. Yeah, this is we built this segment for such a time as this, as they say.
Yeah. It's like having a button, push this for emergencies, and we just bring Clay Newcomb on and we solve it.
There we go. I wish it was that easy. It was that easy.
Me too. Well, I mean, I know you have been thrown into, as have I, kind of researching a bill that's been introduced in the California legislature, SB 252, particularly introduced by Senator Wiener, and a co-author was, I'm not even going to say this right, Bjornar Horvath.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the impetus for what we're talking about. And I will say, like, California wants to ban. That's how I just phrase it. California wants to ban bear hunting. That's not true. But Senator Wiener definitely does.
Yeah.
So that's what we're dealing with. Senate Bill number 252 in the California legislature right now.
So this bill was introduced on January 25th. And Ben, I don't know exactly what direction we can go because there's so many directions, but
sure.
You know, this bill is so different than much of what we've seen seriously considered in states for several reasons, but the primary and simple reason that I think people can take home if they just hear one thing is that this bill has zero science, zero data backing it. There's not, you know, sometimes you get a bill that comes before a government agency and perhaps there is a hint of benefit to it per the science, mm-hmm. or per the finances, or, you know, there's this like small caveat that like, well, yeah, if we really value that over all this other stuff, we might lean towards this. Well, this appears to be, well, there is just no data whatsoever by the California game officials that speak to this being beneficial to bears in any way. And that clearly means that this is an emotional appeal to a base of people, that this is an easy sell to, and it just sounds good. Like, so that's the one. You know, I've heard it said by Robbie at Blood Origins, who did a good job summarizing this bill. But he said, this is the silver lining for us as wildlife conservationists and hunters, is that this thing's got no teeth other than it's an easy sell because it just sounds good. We're banning trophy hunting bears in California. I mean, that's all that they're saying. And but therein lies the problem with all this kind of stuff, is for people to get on the same page as us, there's a lot of steps of information, knowledge, understanding of intent of the human behind this that has to be taken before somebody can come to a place and go, oh, okay, I get it. Now I see why we need a bear season. Where for them, it's just one thing. Yeah. Hey, did you know you can trophy hunt bears in our beautiful state of California? I want to stop that because I want to protect bears. That sell is a one-step sell. Our sell is like a five-step sell, you know.
At the very least, maybe more.
Yeah, and that's what makes it very difficult. But Ben, that's just kind of it's just kind of an entry point for us.
Yeah, and I think that it's good to talk about, because I was talking to Sam Lundgren, who actually wrote a piece for MeatEater.com. New legislation could ban bear hunting in California forever. And we were talking about this, and he said, are we doing, you know, he said, stuff like this is going to continue to happen. You know, are we doing something wrong with our messaging? Like, what are we doing? What could we be doing better to help California? And I said to him exactly what you just said to me. Listen, man, we are fighting against, and this is true with a lot of things. This is true with specifically in my case, I believe with AR-15 bans and things like that, that you can make up names, you know, Bear Protection Act. SB 252 is called the Bear Protection Act. Mm. That's the name of it. And yeah, as you read the press release from Senator Wiener, who's out of San Francisco, he says, over the past few years, black bears have faced unprecedented habitat loss due to climate change and wildfires, and continued sport hunting in California makes survival an even tougher climb. It's time we stop this inhumane practice once and for all. He has connected climate change and wildfires, which are political topics du jour, to sport really? Hunting of bears. Like, that's a smart political move to say, you know what threatens these bears? These two things we know are bad, climate change and wildfires. Oh, and by the by, sport hunting as well. And we've seen that in other places, in other states.
The science behind that, Ben, is that in the 1980s, the bear population was said to be in California, the state of California, between 10 and 15,000 animals. We're talking about black bears. Mm-hmm. Today in California, and bear numbers are hard to just pin down. You know, it takes years to study population dynamics. And so these state agencies, when animals are thriving, they don't spend a ton of money on studying them necessarily because they're doing so good. You know, they're putting their research funds towards other stuff. But so I don't know exactly when the last statewide population study was on bears, but they say today in 2021, despite all the environmental chaos, habitat, whatever, there are between 30 and 40,000 bears in the state of California. I mean, it is absolute falsehood to say that bears are under any kind of stress. Yeah. Even, I mean, it's like they're, now I'm not saying there's not lots of habitat loss in California. That's, I mean, the human population is expanding so rapidly for sure, but it doesn't seem to bother the old Ursus Americanus, man. I mean, they'll live in your backyard.
Yeah.
And so therein lies our position too, is that these animals are thriving, and they've thrived underneath a regimen of managed hunting in the state. So it's a really hard, if people had those facts, it would just be like, so tell me again, will you prove to me that bears are struggling and are having a hard time surviving? I mean, it's just bizarre.
Yeah.
Man.
Sorry. Yeah, to start a bill like this, especially the public push to get people on board with this bill, because this, we're in a very key time in the month of February before, as we were just talking to Brian Lynn from the Sportsman's Alliance before we jumped on, he was telling us that this bill right now has been introduced, and it will be kicked around before it gets into committee sometime in March, early March, mid-March. So there's some time here where this bill just kind of sits and waits to get heard. Yeah. And then once this is the time to really oppose it and understand how to oppose it. But then you think of what the HSUS, the Humane Society of the United States, is saying. I mean, they're probably the most prominent anti-hunting organization in terms of introducing legislation or supporting legislation on a state-by-state basis. Which, again, last time we talked about getting behind the Sportsman's Alliance for just this reason, because they're the ones who are doing the on-the-ground work here. We can talk all we want, but they're the ones doing the work.
Yeah.
And HSUS claims, and another part of this kind of press push for this bill, that 70% of Californians oppose bear hunting and 63% support banning it. And again, if you're going to lie to people, you know, you're going to create a false set of encouragements here, and there are just a set of falsehoods, then no wonder 70% of them oppose bear hunting, because they've not been presented with anything near a full.
And
slate.
I'd like to see if that's a true statistic, or is that, you know, what's the,
yeah,
what, like, how many people did they ask that, you know?
Assuming that's true, how did we get there? you know?
Yeah.
And again, that's a big part of this is how do we talk to everyone about hunting, and particularly things like bear hunting, which seem to be on the chopping block for reasons, you know, we've already discussed and we know, because bears are much easier to like, and they live a lot of times in our kids' bedrooms. So let's talk about the bill itself. I read it. I know you read it. There's a couple of things in the beginning of the bill. It wants to strike Section 302 of the Fish and Game Code. Mm-hmm. And that I'll read that 302, and we'll just talk about this part. When adopting regulations pursuant to any authority otherwise vested in the commission by this code, the commission shall annually determine whether to continue, repeal, or amend regulations establishing hunting seasons for black bears. The determination shall include a review of factors which impact the health and viability of the black bear population. So that's what's currently in Section 302 of the Fish and Game Code in California. And this bill wants to repeal that. Literally just crossed it out in red.
Yeah. You know, I think it's important too, even to take a step back, Ben, what they're trying to do, like in the way that these bills are written, is they're trying to remove black bears from the registrar of game animals in the state of California.
Yep.
And it's just semantics, but it still might give some information to people about how these things work. So basically, there's a list of game animals in the state. Those game animals are then legal for the state game agency to make hunting season and regulations about hunting on. And they're trying to remove that animal from as a game animal, which I thought is really ironic, Ben, because in Michigan, I have a deep respect for the Michigan Bear Hunters Association. They're a group, a statewide group in Michigan, very well ran, good guys. And in the 1950s, prior to the 1950s, bears in Michigan were not game animals, which means they were hunted. They were basically unprotected. And the bear hunters came in and actually fought for them to become, game animals to protect them. And under them becoming game animals, their populations thrived. And now Michigan is absolutely full of bear, and the bears are doing great. So point being, it's all a matter of perspective. He's saying we got to take them off this list to protect them. But the science and the history means that actually when that animal is on there, it is protected and does better. So just kind of interesting angles, you know?
Yeah, that's really the heart of what this bill is when you get to reading all the way through it. The heart of it is we're removing this animal from the list of game species. And again, there's history here with California, but particularly in this case, I find it ironic as well that when I read the determination shall include a review of factors which impact the health and viability of the black bear population is crossed out. It's taken out.
Yeah.
So they, I read the rest of this bill. There's nothing to replace it here. What other agencies in the state government of California would be reviewing the black bear population at all? I mean, are there other public health agencies in this case that might be reviewing it based on problem bears? Possibly. Right. But in this case, the Game and Fish Agency is taking care of this game animal. They're looking at the health and viability of the population.
And what this is saying is that right is going to be taken away from them. Is that what you're saying, Ben?
Yes, exactly what I'm saying. You're decoupling these things, right? You're taking away the relationship between game animal and game and fish department.
Yeah.
And that relationship, even in the language in this Section 302, is concrete.
Right.
You know, it's basically what Section 302 is saying is that every year or, you know, at a timing dictated by the Fish and Game, they will annually determine whether to continue, repeal, or amend regulations establishing hunting seasons for black bears. The determination shall include a review of factors which impact the health and viability of the black bear population. It doesn't say we're hunting black bears forever, does it? It says, right, we're going to review this every year and determine the best course of action based on our North American model of conservation.
You know, what's so wild about it, too, is that if we had this track record of bumbling black bears and it's like, okay, state agencies, you guys have been in charge for black bears for the last 50 years and you've about ran them into the dirt. You know what? We're taking it back. We're going to give the regulation of these animals to someone else because of such a bad job you've done and bears are almost gone. Like, that's one story, which is the exact opposite of what's happened pretty much everywhere. It's game agencies, conservation-based hunting, license sales, funding of all this stuff has worked. And Ben, you've heard me talk about it. You've talked about it. We all know that black bears are one of the shining stars of big game animals in North America right now that are finding ways to adapt into new habitat and are expanding their range all over. I mean, there's not a ton of big game animals that you can just say, man, now there's, you know, they're moving into North Texas and they're moving in Oklahoma and they're moving into, you know, they're just, there's all these populations are expanding. And so, like, this isn't a thing of merit. It's not like you've done a bad job, so we're taking it away. And that's usually the way things work in life. If you're a normal human, if you do a good job at something, you get to continue to do it. And that's why, Ben, like, we can be upset and even angry, which it does elicit these things inside of me. But we realize that we're not fighting against logic. We're not fighting against or standing against, you know, it's not like these people, if you just sat down, if they just listened to this podcast, they would be like, oh, we were wrong. Yeah. We're fighting against something that's a lot deeper, and it's a ideological clash. It's a lot of different things, and therein lies the problem. So it's powerful for us as hunters and conservationists to have this information. I think all this stuff that we're talking about ought to be on the tongue of people that care. And maybe not everybody can, you know, maybe all the details aren't as important, but, like, it's really powerful to have this information, this understanding, but still we're dealing with something bigger than this, you know.
It is, It's also connected to me. It strikes me as, like, it's one of the things I'm most, that elicits the most passion in me about, you know, in the realm of hunting, is that when you connect animal rights ideology to a growing division in this country, fueled often by misinformation and media spin and propaganda, and that propaganda is often attached to ideologies, and that's what's happening here. You know, that we might say, we did a episode with Miles Nolte a few weeks ago where we talked about media and division and how that affects us, and here we are a couple weeks later looking at a good example of it. And HSUS spokesperson Sabrina, I'm gonna get this wrong too, I always do, Ashan, she's the California state director for the HSUS, she said, Californians deeply value the environment and have shown time and time again that they don't want to see their iconic wildlife slaughtered for sport. By passing the Bear Protection Act, California can cement its position as a leader in protecting our natural resources and spare thousands of California's majestic and beloved black bears from a needless and unnecessary death.
Wow. That hurts me, man.
Yeah, it really, it feels like it's not, if he, it is a personal attack, because what it's doing here is using propaganda to paint hunters as a bunch of trophy hunting, egotistical assholes who don't care about, the virtue signaling is strong in there. It's setting it up as hunters who don't care about these iconic species.
Virtue signaling. I like that word. I see where you're going with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It signaled where value lied. You know, I've got three things here, Ben, and I'm going to say all three of them, and then I'd like to make a comment on them.
Please.
This legislation sets precedents, and that was in her language, you know, to be a leader. California set to be a leader. I also want to comment on the unneeded death of bears, what she said, and then trophy hunting. Can I make a comment on all those? I wanted Please. To say them so I wouldn't forget them.
rip them out.
The reason this is so dangerous is because of what she said, what they see. Like, this is not normal legislation. We normally don't just make legislation based upon ideology, especially with legislation that has formerly been instructed by science and history. And so the problem is that if this passes in California, it gives a wide open door for other places to do the same thing. And we see it all over politics, is that one state does something and then all of a sudden it opens the door for other states to do the same thing. That's number one. Let me comment on that too.
We were just talking to Brian Lynn, like I said, from Sports Alliance. This is the thing that they battle. If you go back and listen to their appearance on this show or others, this is the thing that they battle. Precedent setting on the judicial and legal side of this. Yeah. I'm not an expert in that, so I won't go into it. But what happens, all the HSUS is trying to do here is set a legal precedent to argue against in other states. That's a big part of this, what they're trying to do.
And they know they can get it done
near
San Francisco, California.
Exactly. And so the power here is not only in what happens in California, but the precedents it'll set legally into the future. And that there's already a bunch of concrete examples. I don't have them lined up here right now, but certainly we'll be talking to the Sports Alliance more about this as it unfolds in the months to come. But that's you're exactly right, both on the legal side and the public side. I mean, I think there's two kind of layers there.
And that is exactly why this matters to all of us. I mean, I may never bear hunt in California, and I would bet that 98% of the listeners of this podcast may never bear hunt in California, but this matters to all of us. It matters to a pheasant hunter in South Dakota, a squirrel hunter in Kentucky, a deer hunter in Arkansas. I mean, because it, you know, our world is now so connected through technology, through media. We're just so massively connected. No longer can we divide ourselves and continue to stand. Like, that's why this is so important. And that's the whole essence of guard the gate, Ben. Is that guarding the gate means it's not just bear hunters in California that have to stand up for this. It's not just bear hunters in this country that have to stand up for it. But what we're trying to build is elicit a response of help from everybody. And we can talk later about what that help is. Because I want to try to get specific, and I want to hear your thoughts too, because I've even got some questions about.
I mean, here's one thing that gets into this, man. Like, how crazy is it? And we talk about this all the time. We talked about this with Colorado ballot box biology in terms of reintroduction of wolves. We've talked about that on this show. What we're talking about here is even a more extreme example, I feel, because there isn't a bear population in San Francisco County. Senator Wiener represents San Francisco County. This is a county that doesn't have a bear harvest. There's no bear depredation issues in San Francisco. This and then take a few steps back from that for a minute. Let that soak in. And then go back to the HSUS comments about how this is leading a county in California with no bears in it is leading the legislative battle to ban bear hunting. Like, you start to connect those dots, it gets back to this cultural divide. It gets back to these ideologies we always talk about on this show. Is this such a, as you dig this, as you rip this thing open and kind of look at it, it lays bare so many very important issues in our world. It really does, because this is, it seems so ludicrous to us, people that are really like proprietors of this information that we traffic in it, we talk about it all the time. To us, this seems crazy. But to folks in San Francisco, this seems like common sense. And the divide is painted thusly. Like that, there it is, man. That's the divide that we're working with here. And I don't know how to bridge that gap in this case. I've got some ideas, but that's what we have to do, because to your point, it isn't just about this case. This is going to continue as our cultural division continues.
Yeah.
And the rural and urban divide strikes deeper in our country.
Yeah, that is a great point about San Francisco County.
Yeah.
It really is.
I mean, there's bears breaking into cabins all over California. None of those are in San Francisco. They harass livestock. They destroy property. They do a lot of those things. Not to say that hunting is there to stop that, but certainly this is just to say that, you know, how can you have a perspective on what really needs to happen here? And that goes back to our model of conservation in this country, really this continent, that says that we do not and should not enact wildlife policy in this way.
Yeah.
Science is the way.
Ben, the two other things I wanted to comment on was she had language in her right up there about unneeded deaths of bears in California.
Yeah.
And first of all bears die. They all die. I think we know that.
unneeded is just the weirdest word. It doesn't make any sense. It doesn't compute in a natural sense.
Yeah, bears don't live forever. So they're going to die somehow, but that's not my point. My point is that bears that get into trouble in the state of California, I was told by a guy yesterday that lives in California that I spoke with, that at least in his region, the California Game and Fish no longer relocates problem bears. They just euthanize. They kill them. I mean, I don't even want to say the word euthanize, because that is such a tame word for it. They kill bears. So if you get a bear on your and that does inhibit some people, he said, from calling, because he has a bear coming and bothering him and at his house, and he is just doing everything he can to solve the problem on his own, which is a good thing, so that he doesn't have to call the Game and Fish, because he knows they'll trap it and they'll kill it. So, I can't say that that happens everywhere in California. Maybe it does. But the point is that depredation permits, which this bill allots for the Game and Fish to continue to manage bears as needed, as I understand it. Like, so it doesn't take away the California Game and Fish's ability to catch problem bears and put them down. So this bill, it's not really saving bears. It's just other people killing bears.
Yeah.
You know,
it just says, it will make it illegal to kill bears except for scientific research, the protection of human safety, public property, livestock, and endangered species. And so this isn't the Bear Protection Act doesn't necessarily protect bears all the way around. Bears. No, it doesn't protect bears. And so you get back into this. And I'll tell you that when Senator Wiener has made statements previously that most hunters only hunt bears for trophies, leaving the meat behind. We know that to be blatantly false. That's blatantly false. There is absolutely no data, no overarching statements that can be made to back that up. There just isn't.
Right.
There just isn't. Most hunters is a generalization that we probably can't even back up.
Yeah.
But we know that even if that was the case, there's other things that can be done. I'm not advocating for wanton waste laws, because there's a lot of issues with wanton waste laws and what they do for individual hunters. But there's other things that we can do here. If that was the case, it's not, and we won't. But just saying the outright banning. And I go back to what we were saying last week with Ian Harrison about banning AR-15s or assault weapons, which is a made-up term, the burden of proof is on, in this case, the government. If you want to restrict somebody's activities in this way, this is not a constitutional right to go hunting. There's not a... I wouldn't mind there being a constitutional amendment talking about how cool it was to go hunt, but there isn't one, like the Second Amendment. But in this case, the burden of proof needs to lie on the state government here if they're going to ban this. And particularly, it lies with Senator Wiener. He seems not to care about that burden of proof. But the burden of proof must lie on him and the other folks here that are backing this bill. And to match that burden of proof up with someone saying, generalizing hunters in the way that he's done publicly and clearly is doing with this legislation, it's borderline sickening.
Mm-hmm.
It's really pretty, yeah, it just doesn't seem like the kind of thing that we can attack with logic. I just don't know how to better put it.
Yeah. You know, the trophy hunting aspect of it, that is such a, that's like a political hot button word. You know, there's so many other words that we hear
assault,
in politics.
Assault weapons. Trophy hunting.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, this is the information that I feel like every hunter, every single hunter in North America has to have on their lips, is that, you know, somebody says, well, what about trophy hunting? You know, the first thing you say is, well, ma'am, we have a strong ethic inside the hunting community, especially in the last 20 years of utilizing every possible part of the animal that we're killing, number one. Number two, in the North American model of wildlife conservation, we have pillars, the pillar of non-frivolous use of wildlife, which means that wildlife is never killed for no reason. Now, there are some animals that we manage and kill that we don't eat, like, for instance, coyotes. Like, there's a time when you need to manage coyotes. We don't kill a coyote for his meat necessarily, but we kill a coyote as a fur bearer, so his hide is harvested. So this idea of shooting a deer and cutting off his horns and leaving everything is not, that doesn't happen. There are laws that put people in jail for stuff like that. Secondly, and this is where I think hunters and our world can give insight into people that actually kind of flips a light switch and goes, maybe these guys are smarter than they've marketed themselves as, Ben. Mm-hmm. And that's when you say, and it's a pretty easy sell. I've taken people from zero to understanding the kind of the hypocritical twisting of trophy hunting pretty quickly. And Ben, to say that trophy hunting, or what some would say would be to target specific older male animals that either have big hides or big horns, that actually saved North American wildlife. It turned us from a bunch of market hunting people in the late 1800s. We then began to culturally shift to where we valued big antlers and big animals, which were the older age class males. Older age class males, by targeting those animals and giving quantitative value to them, we took the pressure off females and young, and actually allowed populations to greatly expand, because as a culture, we said, man, we want to kill the big one. And guess what? We ate the big one too. More meat, bigger horns, cultural value assigned to that animal. And it took the pressure off females and youngs, and actually helped, was a dramatic, influential part of saving North American big game. Man, like, I've told that to people, and they have, I think it was like synergistic in a sense. Like, it them understanding that was actually a bigger piece of the puzzle than the information I gave them, because they're like, there is some insight behind this. These aren't just a bunch of rednecks wanting to shoot stuff. So, you know, every time I hear the word trophy hunting, Ben, if we do a podcast next month, you'll probably hear me rant about trophy hunting.
Well, so much of this,
I'm going to do it again.
So much of this is repetitive. I understand. Like, we're preaching to a certain choir here, and we're saying the things we've said in the past about similar issues.
Yeah.
But we have to. We have to. If one person in San Francisco County listens to this and says, huh, I don't agree with everything there, but I've taken this, this, and this, and I go back to my community and tell my friends, hey, you know how we used to demonize these people? Yeah, that wasn't just quite right. And that's one of the reasons why I try to talk to as many anti-hunters as I can, as many vegans as I can, just to understand where they're coming from. I don't necessarily want to build that propaganda in my own head. But to get back to, like, I think we should talk a little bit about kind of we touch on this all the time with Pittman Robertson dollars, and you know, we've repeated this number, and I think it still stands true. It fluctuates state by state, but 60% of game department funding comes from hunting. That's license sales, Pittman Robertson dollars, other things like that. That's a general number. Mm-hmm. It fluctuates, mm-hmm. as I said. But in this case, the California Department of Fish and Wildlife, they allow each year for 1,700 bears in their harvest quota. A lot of agency biologists have suggested recently that it be higher than that.
Yeah.
That it go beyond that because of the increases in population that you were mentioning earlier, Clay. So who knows? But hunting bears with hounds has a moratorium. It's been banned. But I'm sure since 2013, I'm sure that's hurt that harvest quota number. Mm-hmm. So last year, there were 30,394 bear tags issued. Only nine.
Oh, really? Yeah. We know that, huh? 30,000.
Yep. Only 919 of them were filled. That's barely more than half the quota out there.
Ben, I'm doing the math. 30,900 license sales. Is that right?
30,394.
Okay. 30,394 times they cost $50 each for a resident. It's like, yeah. $49.95 or something.
Yeah.
So $50. So Ben, that is $1.5 million raised by the state.
Yeah. And as far as I know, that's second only to deer tags in terms of revenue for the California Department of Fish and Wildlife. Second only. Say that shit again. Second only to deer tag sales. What this bill would intends to do is cut off the second biggest species-related funding opportunity for the Department of Fish and Wildlife.
Yeah.
That's what it intends. Can you, like, as a hunter who thinks this is such a grand experiment that's working so well, to be talking about something like this? It just seems, to me, it seems patently insane. But anyway, you think of... Then you go to California. I was putting that 60% number out there. In California, it's a little bit different. I'm just looking it up. Hunters and anglers contribute about a quarter of the department's entire budget through license sales and excise taxes. So that's a fluctuation that I said. That's a pretty big one. But
yeah.
Then you go to this idea that now we're going to start killing, paying someone else, hiring someone to kill or dispatch problem bears, as they do with problem lions, mountain lions currently in the state. Now you have not only a loss of funding, but an additional cost at the burden of the taxpayer. So it doesn't line up very well on an economic front, I don't think. So there's a lot there. There's a lot there, but I think it would be, do you feel like you could talk to Senator Wiener and give him this and talk to HUS and give him this and he say, no, we haven't seen that before. We didn't see that. We don't know about that. We weren't aware of those numbers. Let's go back and recalibrate this bill based on those numbers right there.
Yeah.
Cause part of
it seems like you could do that, doesn't it?
Part of my job is to make sure that I'm taking care of my constituents, and my constituents are taxpayers.
Yeah.
So,
So the last year there were less than 1,000 bears taken in the state of California. You said that number, the quota was 1,700.
That's right.
which quotas are set by game agencies that have the data, have the research, been a number inside of bear management that would be used by pretty much all game managers that I've ever dealt with, is that if you want to stabilize a bear population, you need to at least take out 10% of that bear population annually, because a bear population increases by about 10% per year. I've done the math before. I've walked the math out like 12 years, and I'm pretty sure that counting natural mortality and that growth rate of 10% per year, I think a bear population will double in like 12 years, 9 to 12 years. Mm-hmm. So if you had, it's real interesting to do the math, because you just think like, what if they just totally stopped hunting? You know, what if there was no hunting and just natural mortality was the only way that the population was managed? So, I mean, that would be, and there's constraints on that, you know, I mean, that there are habitat constraints and stuff like that. But that being said, if California's goal was just to stabilize the bear population, which I guarantee they're not trying to, there's not a biologist in California that will say our goal is to help bears and we want them to increase. Like, I really don't think they would say that in the back room, mm-hmm. that their goal is to make there be more bears in California. They're just trying to manage the bears they've got. And so you think of 30 to 40,000 bears in the state, 10% would stabilize them. That would be a quota of 3 to 4,000 bears per year. You could take out that many and not even affect the bear population. And we've seen those numbers come true as well, because, you know, 10 to 15,000 bears in 1980, in 2021, there's 30 to 40,000 bears, but we've been killing 1,000 a year, Ben, presumably, and even more. So like, hunting has been a part of that, and we're still, you know, over, you know, doubling the population in, you know, like 40 years. So point being that you stop all hunting in California, then you're going to have massive bear populations quite quickly. And just, you know, I mean, that's just science, you know. Yeah. I would put that statement up against, I mean, that's just biology. That's just science.
Yeah. So, well, and as far as I know, somebody listening, and this is not something that I have researched, and I've talked a little bit, like I said, with Sports Alliance guys and some other folks about this and locals on the ground, but I can't say this across the board. But what I've heard is that no one is eating the problem bears that are euthanized and killed in the state of California.
Mm-hmm.
So nobody's utilizing the hides.
Yeah.
And I've heard that they're often, or at least in some cases, thrown into dumpsters. And this in and of itself, I mean, there's so many that I couldn't disagree with this particular thought process, ideology, legislation more on any other basis than that one. That the value that someone else is going to tell me that they value this animal more, and they want to stop unnecessary killing. Yet my value comes with the meat and the hide and the actual animal itself, not the idea of the animal on a landscape that doesn't exist.
Right.
And so that for me is, that's the most painful part of this, that hidden beneath the emotional pull of trophy hunting of bears is a lack of understanding of what a bear's value really is, and the lack mm-hmm. of the value of the actual meat and hide itself. Like, there's
some holes in the ethics behind that. Oh my
God, the veneer painted over legislation like this.
Mm. And Ben, this is a great place to say something that we've said for a long time, but I'm hearing more people say it. And so I feel like the message is getting out. But I believe that we utilize more of a black bear than potentially any other big game animal that we hunt, because we eat the meat of a black bear, which the world is now finding out how great black bear meat can be. Number two, we can render the fat of a bear. So usually, you know, if you had fat on an animal, that would be, you know, it's not a commodity you'd take home and render down and use. You know, that would be waste in some ways, which isn't always bad. There's always going to be some waste on anything, even in commercial butchering of animals. But we render the fat of a bear, and we're learning how good bear grease and bear oil is for just everyday use. I mean, I'm amazed how many people are doing this now, which is awesome. And then, you know, I bet 90, this would be generous, 95%, probably closer to 98% of bears that are harvested, their hides are tanned to be saved for future years. Which, you know, think about how many deer, what would the percentage of white-tailed deer in this country be that people tanned the entire hide? Less than 1%? I mean, you see what I'm saying. And I'm not throwing white-tailed deer hunting under the bus, but I'm just saying, from a utilitarian standpoint of utilizing a game animal as a commodity, which is part of our responsibility as hunters, man, black bears are at the top of the chart.
Yeah.
And so to say that all these bears are going to be killed in California, nuisance bears killed, and they're either buried with, you know, they're buried with backhoes, or they're put in garbage bins. And that's the truth. I mean, I've heard that, Ben, and I mean, I can't take you to the documentation that says that, but I promise you there could be the odd bear that is the hides tanned or something for science or to be given away or something. But certainly it's not like they have some system in place for every bear that's killed by government agents to be the meat to be distributed, the hide to be tanned. They don't have any bear grease renders out there working in the state of California, as I understand it, being paid by government dollars. That's what they need. They need somebody full-time rendering all that bear fat.
Yeah.
That's what I think.
Hey, Steve here. I want to talk about something crucial for any outdoor enthusiast, which is battery reliability. I've got Interstate batteries powering my gear. I have Interstate batteries in my camper. I run an Interstate battery in my boats. I use Interstate batteries because the last thing I want is to be left powerless. Interstate batteries isn't just another battery company. They are outrageously dependable. In Alaska, the boat dealer that we use for getting stuff and repairs, he uses Interstate. Whether you're gearing up for hunting season, planning your next RV trip, or getting your boat ready, Interstate has the battery for all your needs. With over 150,000 dealer locations, the power you need is always nearby. Interstate batteries aren't just about power. It's about being prepared for any situation. Don't let a dead battery ruin your adventure. Head over to interstatebatteries.com, use their store locator, and equip yourself with a battery that won't let you down. When you're out in the wild or just on your daily commute, an Interstate battery is your key to a dependable journey.
There's a guy named Earthling Ed who's like a big animal rights vegan activist. I'm sure he's not listening, but if he is, come on the show. Let's talk. And he's had a few debates with hunters and different things, but he always talks about the altruistic hunter. He's pulled some clips from well-known hunters talking about how, you know, if we don't kill them, nature's going to get them. And a lot of this idea that we're trying to say, like, we are merciful by killing these animals. And I'm not making that argument at all. I'm looking at numbers. I'm looking at data. I'm looking at successful wildlife management. But even if I throw all those things out, what you just said matters. You know, bear fat. Mm-hmm. Bear fat, you know, whitetail fat and bear fat don't have the same value within the hunting community. They just don't. Bear hides and deer hides don't have the same value within the hunting community. They just don't. Bear meat and deer meat don't either. I think we could do a lot to kind of level set that in the years going forward. And you have already done that, and Meat Eater's done a lot of that work. But when, you know, in terms of altruistic hunters, I don't think of it that way. I don't consider myself altruistic for killing the bear. I consider myself utilitarian, you know,
yeah,
more than that. So I'm not, it just goes to kind of how an animal rights person sees this argument and how I see it.
Right.
But and before we, I do want to get to what people can do here and how they can help, because you know, both houses in the state legislature in California, in the state government, have a supermajority from the Democratic Party, and they have a Democratic governor, Gavin Newsom, who has signed some of these bills, has passed some of these bills to ban certain types of hunting in the past. And so here we are with, if Gavin Newsom wants to make it happen, he'll probably sign it just like he did bills banning bobcat hunting and fur trapping in 2019, a couple of years ago now. Certainly, if we go through the history of bans of this nature, the state banned mountain lion hunting in 1990. They followed that with, you know, a couple decades later, we'll just ban bear hunting with hounds. That was in 2013. And then those other two bans that we mentioned in 2019. So if there was anything that illustrated the creep that you talk about with Guard the Gate, those numbers right there, those year, I mean, you're talking, you know, at this point, a 30-year creep. And we've made it to all the way from banning mountain lions and hunting with hounds all the way to banning the hunting of black bears, a highly populated and a revenue, the revenue black, you know, revenue in the black species in the state. You know, we've made it that far in 30 years. So who knows what we got to do. But before we get to what people can do, and we've talked about this before, so we will, some of this will be repeating ourselves. We have, there is a illustrated divide between us and them, and I hate that. I hate it. I want to just talk quickly, Clay, about what can be done to illustrate our points here directly to the people we want to talk to, because hunters, and whether you're a new hunter or a veteran hunter and you're listening to this podcast, I'm hoping that you agree with what is Clay and I's, you know, passionate plea for understanding here. But I don't know if I can get Senator Wiener on this podcast, but I'm going to try. But other than that, which seems unlikely, maybe we catch lightning in a bottle with that. But other than that, Clay, what do we do to bridge this gap? Because I am not willing to engage in an us versus them dialogue that gets us nowhere but convincing us how right we are and how wrong they are. Because the only way that we fix this is to go over to them and see what the hell they're thinking and how we can really make a large scale impact on the thought process and ideology of this anti-hunting crowd.
You know, Ben, I just jotted down four things right here, and I wish there was just a clear cut answer, man. I mean, some things in life, some problems we have in life, there is an answer. It's like, do this, and you will succeed in what you're trying to do. This is not one of those things. But there's like a suite of things that I think that we can do. And not one of them is the golden key, but they're all really important. But I think they're all really attainable things that we as North American sportsmen and women can do. And Ben, I'm just going to run through these real quick. The first one is active activism, which means to me, part of that is joining groups, conservation groups that are in this fight at a real level. And man, Sportsman's Alliance, I think when you buy a hunting license, there ought to be, included in that license should be an extra $25 a year to be a member of Sportsman's Alliance. Sportsman's Alliance ought to have 11 million members. Yep. Those guys are fighting the fight every day. They know legislation. They know government. They know politics. It's just an incredible group. And I mean, I got no affiliation with Sportsman's Alliance other than I'm a member, and I would be a life member if they sold a life membership. So number one, activism, be a member of, you know, Safari Club International, you know, Boone and Crockett Club, Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, you know, there's all these groups, but specifically in this fight, Sportsman's Alliance is leading the way. And I know I've left out others, man. And please, sure. People are so petty. Like if you leave out one, they're like, oh, Clay must be against such and such National Wild Turkey. Nope. Join the National Wild Turkey Federation too. A hunter ought to be financially responsible. And we've got to be. In this day and age, we just have to be like be members of these groups and support them because that's big. The other thing is just we as individuals have to be educated because all over your life, there's points of overlap where you are a hunter. You have an identity as a hunter. People know you and you have opportunity to portray hunting in an accurate way, which dramatically influences public perception. Mm-hmm. Grassroots activism of just the average guy being educated. Being back in the 1980s, hardly anybody knew a single thing about white-tailed deer. If you ask somebody what a snort wheeze was in 1985, they didn't know because nobody ever said that before. Mm-hmm. Today, my 12-year-old son knows more terminology and more of the basics of whitetail deer biology than the experts did in the early 1980s. Yep. You know, I'm exaggerating to make a point. Point being, we can bring the baseline of data and information up so that the average guy that buys a hunting license, when he hears someone say, oh, bear hunting's just trophy hunting, he goes, what the heck are you talking about? We utilize bear meat. We render bear fat and trophy hunting actually save North American wildlife. So targeting the big ones, not a bad idea. You see what I'm saying?
Yes.
It's like, we just have to like, that just has to infiltrate us. We just have to be smarter, faster, wiser. Yeah. And, so that's number two. Number three is to, I say this all the time and Ben, I scrutinize my own self, but you know, I can talk a big game on a podcast about being ethical and utilizing bear meat and all this stuff. But man, Clay Newcomb has to look at his own life and find holes in his life where my declaration does not meet up with the life that I live. And so like, you know, so if we talk about hunters being ethical and hunters being, the good guys, man, you got to make sure that that's who you are when nobody's looking. And I think that, and I say this, and it's really a romantic idea. I mean, but I like this idea of hunters being like an elite people. You meet somebody that's a hunter and you're like, man, I bet that guy has character. Man, I bet that guy's honest. I bet if that guy worked on your house, you wouldn't have to worry about him, you know, cheating you out of money. Like, I think our connection to wild places and our connection to just the realism of being a hunter should make us better people. It's not the only thing that should make us better people. There's a lot of stuff that should. But so I clean the inside. You know, there's a biblical reference of cleaning the inside of the cup first. Mm-hmm. And worrying about the stick in your eye before you worry about the stick in your brother's eye. Man, that's so true. I mean, people, there's weight behind words that people have because of internal stuff that is unseen. When somebody says something, sometimes you're just like, that guy knows what he's talking about. And it's because of the lifestyle that he lives, the place that he speaks from. People perceive that. I think as North American hunters, we can live a lifestyle that gives our ideas credibility simply because who we are. I deeply, deeply, deeply believe that. And then overall, Ben, like, what can we do? What can we do? Man, in a democratic society, we've got to make a splash. You know, Brian Lynn told us just earlier that that if these bills can be cut off before they actually reach the legislative floor, that they're much easier to handle. I mean, what I'm seeing on social media right now is that guys are tagging this senator. People are speaking out about it. We've just got to make our voice heard. And that is often done in, there's petitions that you can sign that are going around right now. There's, that's where it's tough to know who to trust. Like, where do I put my petition? Man, all I can say is that find a group that you trust and just do what they do. you know. But we've got to just take the time to do it. You just got to take the time, sign that petition, you know, repost something on social media is so powerful. Repost something. And what I always say too, and I said it this week on some of the stuff I was talking about, is we got to stay classy. I mean, if we're just perceived as a bunch of raving rednecks going wild on this senator, we will not be heard. If we are intelligent, smart, respectful, empathetic towards those who don't have understanding, there are people that are not bad people that just don't know. And if you walked up to them and said, bear hunting is bad, we need to stop it, they would go, yes. And then if they sat down with me or Ben, if they were at your house and had dinner with you and your family, in probably 10 minutes, you could convince them, it's actually really good. Like, that's not a bad person. That's just a person that's not misinformed. We've got to have empathy towards people. We've got to be careful about drawing these lines of us and them, which we have to, because it is us and them. But at the same time, we got to be able to make inroads for people to change, you know. And So, man, biggest thing is be financially responsible. Dedicate your money to good causes. Clean the inside of your own cup first. Be educated. Man, like, you hear Ben talk or you hear Brian Lynn talk, like, you ought to be able to talk like that too. And not everybody can, but you should.
Well, you have to be challenged, right? Like, you can't. I was one of the things that really got me going on this was years ago. This must be 4 or 5 years ago. I was sitting with a representative from the company Patagonia at we were getting together to try to talk about some stuff on a business level, but we also had this like shared idea that public lands and hunting were a good thing. And it was kind of it was a tete-a-tete. It was kind of, I was saying my things, they were saying theirs. And they asked me very simple questions. Like, tell me about this excise tax. I don't understand. Tell me why this is good. I don't understand. Tell me how the hunting funds all this stuff. Tell me why you're so confident that hunting's a good thing. And it was a point in my life where I could speak what I felt was in my own head, was a cursory knowledge of these things. I could speak on the Pittman-Robertson Act. I could speak on the American system of conservation funding. I could speak on the North American model of wildlife conservation, but I didn't know enough about it to be as passionate as we are here today. And I was dancing around some of the things I didn't know. The gaps in my own knowledge were roadblocks in my passionate appeal to these people who were just asking genuine questions. They weren't trying to attack me. They weren't trying to say I was wrong. They were asking me genuine questions so they could get educated about these very important topics to me and to them. And it was those conversations and many others like it that affected me so heavily that I wanted to start a podcast where we could talk about those things in depth and learn about them together. You know, I've since had Dr. Valerius Geis and Shane Mahoney on this show multiple times and read their new book on the North American model of wildlife conservation. I think I know just about as much about it as I possibly could, given those two guys came up with the idea to codify those tenets and put them out to the world. So I feel like I've come along and I am a better voice for hunting. And I think that's what you're describing, right? That's what you're describing. And also in my own life, once I had children, I realized that I couldn't, my children are smart, perceptive, little human beings, and they're going to see me, if I'm being disingenuous, they're going to see the intimate moments of my life that would relate to the disingenuous moments of my public life. And when I say public life, I just mean social media. Even if you don't have a podcast like I do or Clay does, they're going to connect the disingenuous statements I make in public with what they see in the garage after a deer hunt or what they see in the field after a deer hunt. So these are very personal things for me. I didn't do them to prove anything to anybody. So I really do appreciate on a personal level the point you're making there. And that's the kind of reflection that I'd like to see when I look in the mirror. And I think all hunters probably should when they look in the mirror. And I want to just reiterate, and you said this, I said it earlier, this this podcast and explaining these things and being passionate about these things is not to elicit an us versus them mentality. If that's what you're picking up here, you're missing the point. The point is to get educated, is to do better, and then to communicate to these people firmly, we disagree, and here is why. It's not to call them names. It's not to say San Francisco is this or Senator Wiener is that. That's not the point. And I'm just repeating a lot of what you said there, Clay. But I mean, it truly is. That truly is the way forward, in my view. And again, I'm going to try to get Senator Wiener to come and talk to us. I'm going to call the HSUS and see if I can't get those folks to talk to us. I've got a lot of ideas about how to just talk to these folks, including getting really aggressive with that and going to where they are. And so that's part of it, but that's only for this show and for me. But if rewind the tape here and listen to what Clay just said, and you'll have a good roadmap on how to be a little bit better and how to understand these things a little better. Let me just say this. If you want to do something right now, go to Sportsman's Alliance and become a member. That's the first thing. We've already said that. Write a letter and write that letter to California Governor Gavin Newsom. Write a letter to State Senator Wiener. Write a letter to anyone really in the any representatives in the legislature that are going to hear and see this bill, Senate Bill 252. You can also join the California chapter of Backcountry Hunters and Anglers. Get involved there. A lot of good volunteer level folks that are doing good work. We're going to talk to some representatives here pretty soon from Safari Club International about their stance on this. Probably next week or the week after. We're going to get them on, talk about this. Western Bear Foundation, California Rifle and Pistol Association, all kinds of things you can do. But the first thing you do, if you haven't heard any of those groups, explore all of it. Just like you listened to us and hopefully learned a few things and gathered some knowledge you didn't have prior. We'll talk about it further on the show, but man, I feel like this is a cross-section of all the things that we've talked about in the 2.5-3 years of this program. And all the things I've heard you say over the years, Clay, this is kind of a meeting point, a nexus for all of wildlife and habitat management and our North American model and trophy hunting and animal rights, predator management, urbanization, the cultural divide in this country. All of that kind of is in this big pot of gumbo that is SB 252 in California. So... that's important. Any final words on this, Clay? We'll have you back for more Guard the Gate. I can't imagine we won't be talking about this throughout the spring. But is there anything you want to say from your end to kind of wrap her up?
No, here? Ben. I think I've said it all. Just guard the gate.
Guard
the gate. Thanks for the conversation, Ben.
Yeah, thank really you, Clay. Appreciate Always appreciated. Guard the gate. That's it. That's all. Another episode in the books. Thank you to Clay Newcomb. Thank you to all of you for writing in. Jesse G. Hey, listen, I'm recording this after something crazy happened last night. We were getting ready to post this episode. Put it out there on Tuesday morning like normal. And in about 7 o'clock last night here, we learned that California State Senator Scott Wiener and his office had dropped Senate Bill 252 in California to end bear hunting in the state. It is a bit of a shocker. It was something that we did not expect. We expected a battle, a fight. We expected to have to educate. We expected to come up with a lot of opposition as this went forward. But now I'm sitting here, it's early in the morning. Last night we learned of this news. I called State Senator Wiener's office and talked to one of his representatives, who did confirm with me that because of the COVID pandemic, they said, an urgent need to address the COVID pandemic, Wiener believed this isn't the time to focus on this right now, was his quote. This is only comes 1 week after the bill was introduced, and it didn't even make it to committee. We at Meteor, we talked to Roy Griffith, who's a retired assistant chief warden for the California Department of Fish and Wildlife. He said that it's likely this negative attention brought on by by this podcast, by MeatEater, by other publications, in concert with a Change.org petition, led the senator to back off his plans. Now, obviously, we don't know that. The official position is COVID-19 was to blame for the killing of this bill. But we know that probably nothing changed from 7 or 8 days ago till now with the COVID-19 challenges in Senator Wiener's county there in San Francisco County. So it's safe to say that he met some opposition that maybe he wasn't ready for. Talked to Brian Lynn, who, as we mentioned in the podcast, the VP of Communications and Marketing for Sportsman Alliance. He said the hunting community and conservation community undoubtedly had an impact on the early death of this legislation. He said, quote, if there wasn't any pushback, SB 252 would likely still be going forward. It was great to see so many people and groups in a unified voice pushing back against a short-sighted and dangerous piece of legislation. This is great. This is not only what we wanted to see. It's more than that. It sends a message to any state. It sends a message to anyone who thinks that they can introduce legislation to ban hunting that may feel right in their district, their county, that is not right for our country and not right for their state, that it is going to be a tough road to get those things passed. Do not, everyone out there who took part in this, everyone out there who wrote in, do not think this is a small thing. It is not a small thing. And Sportsman's Alliance shared something late last night, after we recorded, that I wanted to read to you. And this is a quote from Wayne Pacelli back in 1990. He made this quote in Fool Cry magazine. And he's the former CEO, a pretty famous animal rights activist, and former CEO of the Humane Society of the United States, HSUS, the Fund for Animals. He basically created the largest anti-hunting organization in the world. And he said this, quote, we are going to use the ballot box and the democratic process to stop all hunting in the United States. We will take it species by species until all hunting is stopped in California. Then we take it state by state. That's a pretty sobering thing, you know, and as we talked about in the podcast that we recorded yesterday, this is something that we're not going to fall into the trap of us versus them. But that, all that being said, it's important to stand up for what we believe in, and it's important to be clear how strongly we believe in it. Certainly there are folks like Wayne Pacelli out there that stand against what we believe. So we'll continue to stand up, and we'll continue to speak what we believe to be the truth and the facts of the situation respectfully, and we will continue to come across the table to anti-hunters and animal rights activists and talk to them and express to them that we do have more similarities than we probably do differences, and see where we get here on the Hunting Collective. A little bit of a different ending than we all thought, but the ending we all wanted. I'm excited. Congratulations to all of you that took part in this. And this is a different ending, but a better one. So we'll see you next week on the Hunting Collective. Say bye, Phil. Oh, he's not there. Bye. Too long, cause I can't go a week without doing wrong. Oh, without doing wrong. Without doing wrong. Oh, without doing wrong. Drinking in heaven. Hey, we're gonna take a little break here and talk about Interstate batteries. Now, if you're like me, enjoying the great outdoors, you need gear that is as reliable as it gets. That's why I power my adventures with Interstate batteries. I use Interstate batteries in my boats. I use Interstate batteries in my camper. Great for your truck too. From Alaska to Montana, they're outrageously dependable. Battery is essential. With over 150,000 dealer locations, finding one is easy. For all your vehicles, land or sea, choose Interstate. Head to interstatebatteries.com and find your power today.
After 3 years of work, our follow-up to the Meat Eater Fish and Game Cookbook is here. It's the Meat Eater Outdoor Cookbook. Wild game recipes for the grill, smoker, campfire, and camp stove. Here is your book for everything that's best cooked or eaten outside. From grilling to open fire cooking to Dutch ovens to smokers to barbecue to backpacking meals to how to pull off the perfect fish fry. With pit stops along the way for lessons about ice age cooking methods and the best 5 ways to construct a cooking fire you can be proud of. And of course, we're focusing on wild game and fish here with over 100 recipes, including stuffed venison burgers 3 ways, wild duck with aji verde sauce, a jerky made with cola, a gin and tonic made with fire charred lemons, and grilled frog legs made with a sticky sweet sauce. This ain't your normal cookbook, so be prepared to be surprised. Get your copy now. For more info, visit themeateater.com or buy it wherever books are sold.